Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 602 for comics originally released on February 20th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Justice League number 18. This is part of the Legion of Doom storyline. And I had recently caught up on the last couple of issues of Justice League. Some worked better for me than others. Overall, I like the Justice League property. I'm not going to say this is one of the high points of its history, but it's also not one of the low points either, so there's that.
Okay. Well, I have, interesting enough, I've been enjoying the Snyder parts of Justice League. The Tynion parts, not quite as much.
You know, I can understand that, because as I was reading through this, I made a couple of notes, as I want to do, and you know, we hit the Brainiac Luthor team and stuff like that, and I'm like, man, we haven't seen that sort of a thing in decades. Because that used to be those two kind of teaming up to thwart Superman or whatever was a big thing pre-Crisis.
Oh, okay. And that I didn't know.
Well, it was when Luthor was either in the prison jumpsuit or the power armor and stuff like that, and it was when Brainiac often was the green-skinned alien before he became the fully robotic kind of a thing for a while. So it was very different periods for those characters than more recently.
Okay.
But it was cool to kind of call back to that.
Yeah, so they've been teaming up quite a bit in here.
There were other parts of this, though, that it seemed like it was harkening back to aspects of non-comic book DC lore, like the Super Friends in Smallville specifically.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I mean, you can't have a Legion of Doom storyline without it being essentially a de facto callback to the Super Friends stuff, particularly Challenge of the Super Friends.
Understandable. And so it's pulling from out of comic book continuity stuff into this.
Yeah. And then all the stuff they did with Lionel Luthor and his very accomplished life based on these flashbacks, to me, that was drawing on not necessarily the specifics of Smallville, but the character from Smallville.
Yeah. One thing that was weird for me with this issue is it seems like it dealt, you know, with what was going on here. You kind of have like a mind meld type scenario going on. It's so dialogue heavy, you know, like building up this whole narrative and history. I was just like, it's a lot of material. And I had just read like the annual and read another Snyder issue, you know, just a while back. And I'm like, and then you flip to this and it just, okay, now I'm out of it again a little bit.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I was trying to go through this. There's a lot of world building going on here.
A ton of world building. A lot.
But it's often through exposition, not exploration.
Yes. It's literally written out for you. So it's like, blah, 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 and this happened, you know, and this and this and this. Or, you know, looking at their past, you know, and just watching, you know, the dialogue back and forth and then discussing it, you know. Oh, yeah, remember when this happened? Here's what this is about. And it's just the way he did it, it seems like it could have been done better.
Yeah, because it almost plays like a televised biography than a television show.
Yeah, very weird. And I think, it's probably because of this melding thing that we have going on. But that part kind of threw me a little bit, because it's so heavy. And I don't mind the world building, which was very cool, but the way it was done. But then it ended really weird for me, too. I was just like, that's so weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where it's going on some of this stuff. And there's so much of it where we're being told how things happen versus watching them unfold.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes me out of the story a little bit. Now, the mind meld thing, they could have just as easily been sitting at a table and talking, and it would have been effectively the exact same thing.
Exactly. So it was really weird that they went this angle. It's like you made it overly convoluted.
I think it was just to show off just how advanced Brainiac is in a way that, I don't know, totally makes sense.
Yeah, possibly.
But, you know, hey.
Yeah. Now, did you read the annual before this?
I did.
Completely different, right?
In so much as storytelling style, I would say yes. In so much as world building, I think both are trying to do quite a bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because there was so much world building in the annual. They're building up to the Perpetua thing. Mm-hmm. And here it was more of the world building, but it was just done in such a weird, different way. It felt like I was reading a different book almost.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I think this title from the get-go has had a lot of world building, because they've been building to this storyline for quite some time. But in a way that doesn't have me quite as excited as, like, when Geoff Johns was introducing the different Green Lantern cores and some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's so weird, because, like, I've been reading Justice League since the beginning here with, mm-hmm. with Rebirth. And at the beginning, I was like, okay, this is too many ideas. You know, what Snyder's thrown out. It's too much stuff he's thrown out all at once. It's like, I'm regurgitating all these ideas. Blah, here it is. But now it's starting to be fleshed out, and so I'm really getting into it. I'm really amped up. I can tell they're building for something really big that seems like it's going to happen this summer. It's just, I almost wish, and I know it's not going to happen, that Snyder could just write the book, because it seems like the voices are too different for me that I'm pulled out and I'm trying to remember, oh, yeah, okay, this is what's... It's the same story, but it's very different at the same time. It just feels weird.
Yeah, I think... having one person kind of hears the story and plot it out and another one write it, in this case, isn't benefiting it. It's not killing it either, but it... I agree, if Snyder was doing it himself...
I think we'd just read better.
I think so, too. I don't think we would have just had thump and here it is.
Yes. So, but at the same time, they're building an amazing story, except for in this particular issue, the ending was so just bizarre for me. I was like... the way they're moving and doing stuff and what's going on, I'm like, that's just so weird.
I'm curious where they're going with this. Part of what I enjoyed about this is not only are they pulling in and really building up like the Lionel Luthor character in particular, but they're also leveraging some aspects of the DC universe that haven't gotten, I think, well used of late. Although a little more very recently, but over the last few decades, I mean, Arion of Atlantis, we're getting some stuff with Vandal Savage here. There was even a nice call out to the imps of the fifth dimension.
Yes.
You know, so there's a definite aspect of this is steeped in the lore of comic book DC and trying to expand that mythos. I just think that, again, like you've been talking about with just how verbose it is and how essentially, Tinian's almost telling Snyder's story and stuff. It's like he's gotten, here's what needs to happen. It's like, well, let me just say that happened then.
Exactly. That's what it feels like. Yeah. So just very, very odd. It just comes off a little bit clunky. Now, one thing that I don't know, is Perpetua something that has been around for years in the DC universe?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that okay. I recall, at least.
I didn't think so, but I wasn't sure. But From the way it was portrayed, or I don't know what you would call it, in the annual, it seems like it's not something that you would want to come about. It's something that you would want to stop. Am I wrong?
I would think so, but a lot of things I would want to stop, people like the Legion of Doom are going to want to do.
Exactly. I mean, it feels like it's like the Legion of Doom is becoming like a death cult at this point. Like, this is, they get very, almost like religious tones in here. I'm like, are they becoming some kind of like basically a death cult, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I haven't gotten a really good grasp. And part of it is there was a bit of a lag in my reading for a little bit. So I don't have all of this kind of at a smooth intake for when I was reading a lot of this. I really don't have a good sense of where they're going and why they're going on some of this. And part of it, it's been a long, slow storyline.
Very long, very slow. And what my understanding is, maybe Perpetua's, you know, been released from behind the source wall. And basically, she can annihilate the universe or the multiverse as we see it, which I see is that's what's building up towards this big thing that's happening. I don't know, though. We don't really know.
Yeah, but the problem is there are a lot of big things kind of sort of happening in the DC universe, which is part of what's making it feel schizophrenic. There's this, there's Doomsday Clock, you know, there's Heroes in Crisis.
It's like, which one's going to be the trigger?
Well, they're all going on at once in ways that feel mutually exclusive in some respects.
They really do, because Doomsday Clock seems like it has nothing to do with Justice League. Justice League seems like it has nothing to do with every other thing that's going. So it's very weird. Like you said, big, huge story arcs, but it seems like they're not building towards the same ending.
Yeah.
Which is confusing.
And that's part of what's making the DC Universe kind of unravel a little bit for me at the moment. They're telling good stories, but they're telling very different ones in different places, and it doesn't feel unified. It doesn't feel like there's a good sense of continuity. And in many cases, the heroes aren't being heroic.
Yeah, very true. They've changed a lot of the characters. They're not who they always traditionally have been. And I can understand some of it is you want the best creators to be on these properties, and you want them to have the freedom to do stuff, to come up with the best, most outlandish stories that they can conjure up. But at the same time, when you're working on a shared universe, you almost have to, I don't want to say keep them in check, but make sure that they're on board and rowing the same direction as these people. Because if you got two people at opposite ends of the boat rowing in different directions, you're going to break the ship.
Yeah, but let me toss this idea out here. Should they have done this Justice League book, or should they have done these exact issues for the most part, particularly this one, and just call it the Legion of Doom and do that as a separate series?
That would have been better, I think. You could have had a Legion of Doom book, and then you could have had a Justice League book, and it probably would have read better and made more sense to the readers who are getting into it. That would actually be a great idea.
And it would have had the sense that these two books, we might sometimes see flip sides of the same events from very different perspectives, but it would have felt like it's building up to an inevitable clash between those two.
Yeah, they need to break them out of here, the Legion, and just have two separate books. That would be perfect. And that would kind of clear up a lot of the stuff that I'm having problems with right now with the back and forth, this thread, now this thread, this thread, now this thread, which is a little bit, you know, when Wonder Woman first came out at Rebirth, Greg Rucka, that was probably one of the complaints. I enjoyed it, but, you know, one's in the past, one is now. One's in the past, one is now. And it's very, you know, you almost want to save the issues and read them separately.
Yeah, it was two intertwined stories. You know, it was two bi-monthly Wonder Woman titles, essentially.
Essentially, yeah, with the same numbering.
Yeah, but I mean, this issue doesn't have a single Justice League member in it.
No, nothing in here. So it was very odd in that sense, because I feel like, okay, I just read the annual. Now I get to this and I open it up. I'm like, what's going on again? I feel like jolted around. I'm like, okay. Oh, yeah. Now I remember. It's weird.
I mean, the closest thing to a Justice League member in this is Lex Luthor himself, and I'm not sure I would totally count him, even though officially he was a member.
Yeah. But yeah, you will have no Superman, you will have no Batman, no Wonder Woman, Flash. Nobody's in here.
I mean, the only hero in here is Arion, Lord of Atlantis, and only as a cameo in a panel or two.
Yeah, he's not really part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very weird, but at the same time, it's not bad. And for some reason, the art was kind of rough on this issue for me.
I would agree with that. It's something that I would equate more with a non-Marvel DC book. It's a little rougher in places. The eyes aren't always drawn. It's a little, I almost want to say the figures are almost like they're in clay versus, you know, I don't say photorealistic, but you know what I mean. It's...
I know exactly what you mean. And most of these Justice League books have been pretty good art. And this, I opened up, I was like, wow, this is very different.
It's almost like in some cases, they didn't fully finish the roughs for
yeah.
the pencils.
And one thing I have noticed, I don't know if you've been reading comics longer than I have, you've recognized this, but it seems like when they're building up towards the event, whether it's Marvel or DC, they pull off the top tier artists for the special, you know, summer book or whatever it is, and the regular books sometimes get a step down with the art.
Absolutely. You've got the big event book that people are going to buy. The easiest way to get them to buy that is put top tier talent on it. And if you need to take them off the books they had been doing, it happens.
Yeah. So that's probably what's going on here, because here we are in February, and probably in May, something large will happen.
You mean beyond Heroes in Crisis, Doomsday Clock, and stuff like that?
Yeah.
just saying.
It's just something else large.
But to your point, this was not a bad issue. A fair amount was revealed here. I'm not going to say it happened, because it kind of didn't.
Yeah.
It was all just told to us. But I enjoyed the issue. I thought it was good. But I think both the story and the art could have and should have been better. I'm going to go with a B- on this.
Yeah. I was basically right there with you. I almost went with a C plus on this book. I went with a B minus as well. And the only reason why I didn't is because I could see that there was a lot of work put in here and there was a lot of cool world building. And I know they're building up towards something. I just wish they would get some cohesion between the two writers.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, the thing that prevented it from that C plus or whatever was just how much was in the book.
I would agree with that. You definitely get your money's worth when you buy this comic.
I mean, for me, I was debating between a B and a B minus.
Yeah.
And then the more I looked at it, and it's like, well, you know, it's heavy on exposition. The art could have been a little better. It's, again, it's not a bad book.
No, not bad at all.
But it wouldn't have taken, I think, too much to be a lot better.
Exactly. Just the way he narrated what happened, the way he did things, it just seemed like an information dump issue, which was cool in its own right. But at the same time, information dumps can be done in a better way.
Yeah, and it was definitely an information dump. That's a great way to phrase it.
Yeah, because I felt exhausted after reading. I was like, whoa.
There was a lot of dialogue and captions to read.
Yeah, I didn't want to read it twice. I was like, I did, but I was like, oh, this is a lot to read.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Hulk Farines number one.
What a name.
Yeah, and it's funny because it doesn't star anybody called Hulk Farine, much less multiple of them. But we've got the Hulk, we got Wolverine, we got Weapon H, and, you know, they're all duking it out.
Yes.
Now, I read Weapon H number 12 before reading this, and I didn't pay enough attention to know if that's like the last issue of this, of that series leading into this, or what, because it clearly led into this.
I'm pretty sure it is the last issue.
I was kind of thinking that. I lost track.
Yeah.
And it very much set up why Wolverine and the Hulk were going to go after Weapon H.
Yes.
And it's not a bad concept. It's probably going to sell better as this miniseries than if it had been Weapon H number 12, 13, and 13, 14, and 15. I'll get the numbering right once in a while. Overall, I thought this was a fun read. It was a good issue. It had some interesting ideas here and there. It was more or less what I had expected, which was Weapon H fighting Hulk and Wolverine.
Yeah, kind of like dumb fun.
Yeah. Now, I'll admit, I expected a little more Wolverine than we got in this issue.
I would agree with that, especially with the cover. I was like, where is this guy?
Yeah. I was surprised how much the leader played into this.
Me too. I was not expecting that. So that was a nice surprise right at the beginning of the comic.
Up until he became like a MacGyver version of Bullseye or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. Good description.
And I'm like, when did that happen? Why did that happen? Get rid of that. I don't like it. It's disgusting. Move on.
Exactly.
I was kind of expecting by the time I got to the end of this that we would have had like Sabretooth or somebody Wolverine-ish to kind of balance out the leader.
Yes, but that did not materialize.
Didn't happen, didn't need it, but I was kind of thinking that.
Yeah, that would have made sense. That would have been fun. And do you like the virus, I guess, that's going around right now?
It was awful convenient, and I'm trying to figure out when the leader had time to like put all that together.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, when did this happen? All of a sudden, achoo, everyone's sneezing. I was like, I didn't see that happen, but I guess it happened. It was not shown that it happened.
I don't recall the leader being that much of a biologist.
Me neither.
So, and I have no idea when he had the opportunity to infect Weapon H.
Yes.
So there's that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I started going back. I'm like, did he hit him at some time? What happened here? And I was like, oh, it's just not discussed. Okay, I'm good with that. Whatever.
Yeah, it just happens.
Yeah, now this, I would say, this issue is the opposite of Justice League.
I take it back. I see where it happened.
Oh, you do? Okay.
When they're in the house, they go to the room with the monitors, the panel beneath that. There's a buzz and a smack. Apparently, that's when he got tagged.
Oh, okay. That's what the buzz... Okay. Bzz. All right.
But
all
I missed that on my first reading.
Okay. Yeah. And I just saw that now. So, okay.
So, now, too subtle.
This issue I took is the opposite of Justice League, where Justice League, you were given so much narrative, so much exposition, so much dialogue, and it was world building. Whereas this is a comic, Greg Pak wrote this, the complete opposite, where you have very little world building, and you have that dumb fun, you know, his boxing gloves, you know, are on and people are smacking each other around. It's just such so different, the comics. I'm like, the way they read. This is a much thicker book, way more pages, but I read it in half the time of Justice League.
Yeah, it feels lighter, even though it is, like you said, thicker. To me, this is setting up the modern equivalent of the Hulk-Thing fights.
Yeah, that's the way I felt. And once again, we have another issue where the art was not to my liking. It seemed, for lack of a better term, it seems like somebody who's newer to the industry, who's done some work, but it's not top-notch Marvel work.
I would agree with that. I think they've had better, particularly on this character elsewhere, Weapon Age. I thought it was good. I'm not going to say it was brilliant.
Yeah.
I liked it well enough, and it told the story.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't bad.
But I think, to your point, this is an artist that, you know, 5-10 years from now could be outstanding.
Yes, yeah. And so when you're pumping out 100 books a month, which Marvel is currently doing, like 105 or whatever, you have to bring in new blood. So this was someone who I was looking at the name. It's Ario Anandito. I've never heard of him before, but not a bad job, but it's different. And I could see him, once he gets, you know, a few years under his belt, being a standout artist.
Yeah, I thought it was good art, but the line work could have been cleaner.
Yeah. So that's all it is. It's just a little bit different. I mean, but I was looking at it, I was like, it's just different than what I'm used to, but not bad.
Yeah, and again, this is kind of the roller coaster ride kind of a comic. It's like, okay, here's the basic plot. These guys are going to fight. And guess what? They fight. And it's entertaining.
Yes. I'm interested to see, but I don't expect it, because this will probably end up being a miniseries. I don't think the stuff that happens in here will roll over into the Immortal Hulk. That's my guess.
I don't think so. And I know this is at least a three-part storyline. I'm assuming it's a three-issue miniseries, but I'm not certain.
That's what I'm guessing too. I you know, really don't pay attention anymore to that stuff. It's weird. I read a book, and if I don't like it, I start to drop it. With three issues, I'll buy them all. Even if I hated it, I would have ordered all of them. It's too late.
Yeah, I was going to say, by that point, with pre-ordering, you're pretty much in at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, did you buy this one, or is this something that you just got a digital copy? Or
no, I bought this.
Oh, okay, cool. So you're in for the three-issue run, or did you just the first?
Absolutely. I like Weapon H. I think he's fun.
Me too.
I'm not going to say he's a brilliant concept, but I liked the story he came out of, and I like what they've done with the character since.
Me too. And I like Greg Pak. He's not my favorite writer by any stretch of, you know, the imagination, but he's a decent writer. And he when he wrote the Hulk run that he did, he made it very fun. He added some new lore. He added some new characters. And once again, he's adding characters into the Hulk mythology, which is something I like, because so many writers today, they're kind of guarded with new ideas.
Mm-hmm. It's
kind of refreshing when you have a guy or a lady who's not intimidated or not too selfish to create something new and just say, hey, here's a character I want to create. Boom. It seems like too many times nowadays, they're like, oh, I'm going to save my best idea for my own book. You know, I'm going to just write whatever there is, and I'll just rehash these characters that people forgot about.
Yeah, I think Greg Pak's definitely setting out to play with the toys available, expand the set of toys where it makes sense, and he can do so, and tell some fun stories. And I think he does well with all of that. In this case, I think a little bit more thought or whatever to the machinations of the plot and stuff, like just how certain things kind of happen and been a little more clearer on that, wouldn't have hurt.
Yeah.
But it was clear what was going on, even if we're a little confused, like, where did that virus come from?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'm interested to see how the leader, you know, what he does and what role he plays throughout the story, you know, over the next three issues. I always kind of like the leader.
He's fun. I think there are other Hulk characters that I like more.
Me too.
But the brain versus brawn aspect of the leader versus the Hulk is always kind of cool.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to have something different, something to change it up. Otherwise, you know, it gets boring.
Yeah. For me, I went with a B+ on this. I thought it was a good read and a lot of fun.
Cool. I went with a solid B. And I almost went with the B+ on that because I'm the Hulk guy. But I just gave it a little bit of a knock because I felt like the art wasn't up to my liking a little bit. But I think he can come around. It's not bad art. It's just different. And so I went with a solid B.
I can see that. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is Sharky the Bounty Hunter number 1 from Image Comics. Now, I'll say up front, this didn't make the pre-order cut for me, so I read the press PDF of this.
Oh, okay. Did it look normal or did it have watermarks all in it?
Honestly, I tend to pretty much gloss over if they have watermarks in the press PDF and stuff.
Okay.
Just because there are some publishers that just get really heavy with that.
Yeah, they do.
And in comparison, some of the others, it's like they may have one, but it's subtle enough, it just, I don't even notice. And I'm there for the story, not for the how do they package it for the review copy and stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I've seen a couple where it's a little low res, some that are higher res and whatnot. It's just, you know, you take what you get.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because sometimes it throws me off a little bit on the art when I'm reading the press copies.
Yeah, and again, I'm trying to think which publisher it was. There was one that, man, the watermarking was just crazy. But that's also part of why I try to read from the comics when I can. With this one, I'm pretty sure that Image doesn't really put watermarks in there. If they do, they're crazy subtle.
Oh, cool.
I'm thinking it was either Boom or one of the other publishers that had a much more pronounced one.
I know IDW and Aftershock both had really strong ones.
Yeah, and sometimes they kick down the resolution.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey. With this, again, I thought it was... I think in job with how they handle press PDFs, they used to do a better job because they used to have it, I think, on a FTP site, and I could go back in history. Now they just have the last, like, week or two and the current week. And what that means is if we decide, hey, let's go do the second issue of something, I may not be able to go get the earlier ones.
Ah, so it makes it difficult for you.
I'm less likely to review a later issue of a series in that regard, whereas if it's like a Boom thing where they've got it on the website and I can go like all the way back to the beginning of a title.
Ah, okay. See, you're better than me. You pick an issue number 5, I just jump in. I'm like, I have no idea what the heck's going on and just run with it.
I've done that before. I did that with Squarriors or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's not very fun.
It's hard to give a fair shake to the story.
True, true. I agree.
You know, they put in the time to do all the issues. I figure if I can, I'll read them all.
Yeah. So now with this one, the reason why I was asking you is because, you know, Mark Millar, he usually picks some pretty decent artists. So I didn't know how the watermark would affect you.
Didn't faze me at all.
Cool.
But often I'll, again, if it's a press PDF and they've either downed the resolution or got a watermark, I again, try to intentionally gloss over that and ignore it just because it's not fair to the content creators themselves.
Yeah.
Now, this is the second Netflix series by Mark Millar, the first being Magic Order.
Yeah.
It is not an all-ages book, fairly clearly.
Correct.
But I think it could have been with some minor tweaks to it.
Yeah, they could have taken out the nudity scene and probably a few curse words.
The nudity, very few curse words. There were one or two at the beginning.
Yeah, not very many, yeah.
And I think if they had swapped out like one joke,
yeah,
that was a little off color or whatever, they could have easily had this be an all ages book.
Correct. So he's definitely not going for all ages because it's not that hard to do to flip it.
Yeah. And he chose not to, and that's fine. That's cool. For this kind of a property, I get it. I kind of put this as a wacky space bounty hunter somewhere between Star Wars and Lobo.
Yeah, that's. I don't know a lot about Lobo, but from my understanding, this would be like a Lobo ripoff, probably.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I think it's a more interesting character.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty cool. And he looks like the Purple Man.
Yeah, yeah. whereas Lobo is more white and has spots around the eyes, but otherwise they don't look crazy different.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah,
this one's balding a little on top, I guess.
True. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting, though, because you basically have a guy who has a lot of gambling debt, and he's a bounty hunter, and he picks these high-priced bounties because he's got to pay off his debts. He's a guy who likes to drink and likes to party, apparently.
Yeah. I found the character fun to follow. It was interesting. I found a lot of the supporting characters almost quirky for the sake of being quirky.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
The girl, what was her name? Christine.
Christine, yeah.
Who's getting changed from like an organic to like mechanical so she can become a vehicle.
Yeah.
The whole concept there is just bizarre.
Very bizarre, but at the same time I found it fascinating.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's off-putting or something, but it's one of those, let's really go kind of wacky out there and see what happens sort of things.
Yeah, so the girl is, like, so bizarre-looking, and yet at the same time, very attractive. It's weird.
There was a cartoon in Saturday morning stuff back, I think, in the 80s, like Teen Machine or something like that, where it was a kid who would turn into a car.
Okay.
So this is kind of, I don't say a riff on that idea, but, you know.
It's close enough.
This is a slow, let's go, you know, swap out parts until we're done or something. I don't know. It just boggles the mind.
Yes, I would agree.
But it's the kind of thing that makes this not a comic you're going to confuse with another one.
Yeah, it's very different. I read it, and although I can see that there's some things that he's maybe using from different types of properties, the ideas, you know, because I can't say it's the most original. When he puts them all together, it's something original, and he does it in a very interesting way, something that's very, I don't know how I'd put it, but it's captivating. So the more I read it, I was like, wow, this is weird. I like the characters. I like the world building. It's quirky. It's bizarre. And then even with the, there's like a little fight scene that goes on here where it kind of goes to black in there.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that, how that happened, and then you flip the page.
Yeah. It had some interesting stuff in terms of both the storytelling and, again, the world building and some of that stuff. And there were aspects like the cut to black that felt very cinematic.
Yes.
This doesn't strike me as something that would be cheap to film.
No, this seems very expensive. This would be like, if I was guessing, a high production movie. I don't see this as like a series, as more like a movie at Netflix that they're putting some money into.
I don't know. You've seen various sci-fi shows with tons of aliens and stuff on a TV budget. So.
That's true. That's very true.
I think they could do it. I just don't think it'd be easy.
Yeah, it would not be easy because with everyone looking so strange and being so different, there's a lot of makeup and costume work. And yeah, it would be a big budget production.
But it could be fun.
Oh, I would be in. I'd watch it in a heartbeat.
You know, at the end of this, I really kind of couldn't tell the long-term vision for this other than he's a bounty hunter trying to make ends meet however he can.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's one of those that while I enjoyed it, neither the character nor the plot nor the style of the book made me feel like, oh my god, I just have to read it. Now, I want to be clear. I enjoyed the character, I thought the plot was good, and I enjoyed the style of the book.
What's weird is, I don't know what it is. I'm like you. I enjoyed it. It was not bad. It's Mark Millar. It's great. But at the same time, this was, I felt like, one of his weaker works, and I don't know why. Did you come out feeling that way? This is not his strongest thing?
I would say it's not his strongest thing, because he's had a couple that really just sold me on the first issue. It's like, I love this. I want to keep going.
I think that's what's missing is the hook here. It didn't make me like hungry for the next issue, even though I enjoyed what this was, and it's good, and I bought additional issues. It didn't make me want to come back. When I read Magic Order, I was hooked. I was like, oh, this is good. I want to read the next one. I want to read the next one. This one, it's just missing something. The maybe it's the family aspect, the family intrigue, but it just felt a little more hollow. I hate to say that because it's so rich of a universe and such rich world building here.
Well, again, Mark Millar is great on the world building. In a single issue, he can really set the scene pretty well. I think what's missing here is this felt like it could have just been almost any day in Sharky's life.
Yeah.
Not the start of a pivotal adventure.
That's probably what it is. Yeah, because it's more just like, this is the guy and this is what he does versus, yeah, that it's building up to something large, something monumental that's going to happen to him.
Which is not to say it isn't building up to something large and monumental. It's just it's not blatantly obvious from this issue.
Exactly. That was missing in this issue. So that's what it is. It's the hook at the end, the something that's going to keep you going, ooh, I want to read the next issue. That just didn't come off at the end.
Well, the hook at the end, it's like, okay, how does this really impact Sharky and what's his take on it going to be?
Yeah.
It puts Sharky in a reactive mode versus a proactive mode.
I would agree. Yeah.
Now, I do think there are going to be some people that without a doubt are going to enjoy this and stick with it, and I think they should. If this is the kind of thing that sounds interesting, check it out. See if it works for you. For me, like I said, I liked it, but it's not getting a spot on my reading list.
Ah, so didn't make the cut.
No, it's one of those that there wasn't that thing that made me say, wow, I have to get it because of this, that, or the other. It checked a lot of boxes.
But it's missing.
Again, like you were saying, when you phrased it wasn't his best property and you came out a little wanting or whatever.
Yeah, I was.
I was feeling the same sort of way. It was good, but not something that was so good that I have to keep getting more.
Yeah, and with you talking about that, I think that's what it is. It's the hook at the end or something, because when I read it, I really enjoyed it. But at the same time, like we've said already, I just didn't feel, you know, riveted and, oh, I got to read the next issue. And usually the first issue is where they do that. Any writer, you know, they hook you on the first issue, and it's usually the second issue that's a little bit of a letdown. Horrible to say. But I'm like, okay, well, you didn't hook me here, so I imagine next issue's maybe a little bit of filler, or hopefully they make it more pivotal. But I'm on board right now. I've ordered the next issue.
Well, if we think about what we liked about this in terms of, okay, we got introduced to Sharky, well, he's a known quantity for the next issue.
Yep.
The whole bit with Christine and stuff, well, that's a known quantity for the next issue.
Yep.
Well, they had a cool fight scene. Well, they'll probably have one next issue, but where is that going to really raise the bar?
I don't think it will. That's what I'm worried about, because there's no big crescendo that happened here, something that's he needs to do. It's more just like this guy kicking it around the universe or
yeah,
doing his thing.
The shiny newness wears off after the first issue, and there are very few titles where I think the second issue is the one that'll hook you.
I would agree. So that's where I felt the weakness in this title, and that's where I was left a little bit. It's good, but it's not great. It's just good.
Yeah, and for me, I agree. It's good, but not so much so that it's like, yeah, I got to keep going with it.
Yeah. What's weird is we both came out feeling the same way. Well, at the same time, I look at the art, I'm like, the art's amazing, the writing's decent, but it's just, I would say that the story itself is not one that is going to hook most people.
It's funny, because I think if I continued with it, I would still enjoy it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be unenjoyable.
Well, do I need another random, you know, sci-fi bounty hunter?
Yeah, well, you know, when most people talk about they have a stack and they put their favorite stuff at the top that they want to read first, this would probably be middle of the pack or closer to the, you know, tiered thirds of the way down, just because it's not the must read for that week.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I went with a solid B on this. Like I said, it was well done. It's good, but it failed. Well, it sold me on this issue. It didn't sell me on the next.
I would agree with that. And I was a little more harsh this week. I gave all lower scores. I went with a B-. I thought it was decent. If you're a Mark Millar fan, get it. It's probably going to come onto Netflix. I don't think it's a great flipping book because there's probably been a million of them printed. But I think it's an okay read. It's written well. The art is great. It's just not something that hooks you and makes you hungry for more.
Again, it might for some. It didn't for us.
Yeah, it didn't for me. Yeah, it did not for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
So anyways, a little bit of a letdown. That's kind of sad note. No, I'm just kidding.
None of these were bad books. I don't regret reading any of them. They weren't, you know, oh my God, amazing. But they all had some merit to them.
All right. One quick question before we go any further. Did you edit me out when I dropped out of last week's conversation?
I edited the actual drop and commented that you dropped out and then finished the episode myself.
Okay. Sorry about that, guys. Apparently Skype was updated on Windows 10. And kicks you out immediately once there's an update available.
How thoughtful of it. That's surprising because I'm on Skype on Windows 10 and I was okay.
It was weird because I was looking online and I saw someone posting about that. I'm like, I don't know what the heck happened. That's the only thing I could guess. But mine literally died and it just kept closing. Every time I'd open it, I could see you typing something and it would shut down. I was like, oh, gosh. It was frustrating.
I do worry whenever Skype doesn't update.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, a little bit of frustration, but this week went smooth, and so I'm happy.
Yeah, so far at least. Hopefully we'll finish the episode that way too.
Exactly. Keeping my fingers crossed. And by the way, I was going to tell you this. Have you noticed that a lot of DC books have, not books, but like the big omnibuy and stuff have been getting canceled?
I have not really noticed that. I know I'd gotten a credit on one of my last orders at Cowabunga because a lot of stuff got canceled. Honestly, I haven't had time to dig in and figure out what all that was.
Well, apparently, like, I was like, oh, another one got canceled. I was just chatting on the Slack channel. But Eric was telling me, he's like, apparently, you know, AT&T made their purchase of Time Warner. They were, you know, kind of, you know, the joke again, once again, oh, you guys are still printing those things, comics, wow, which is always encouraging to us readers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next thing was, why are you spending so much money making these? Just make the cheap ones. Which is, I guess if they don't hit a certain sales level, they just don't put the cash into it. You know, if there's not X amount of pre-orders, they're just kind of pushing the material aside and moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, but I think it's short-sighted to have that attitude.
Really short-sighted. So it made me kind of worried. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, why are they doing this? I mean, the big behemoths have bought these, our comic company, Marvel and DC at least, and it's like, oh, I wish they cared about the property, but I guess they don't really care about that. They care about the movies.
Well, they care about the property. They don't care about the merchant, the physical manifestation of it in comics.
Yeah, which makes me kind of sad.
And I'm all for inexpensive trades and reprints and getting stuff out there that way. But I think there's also a definite need and a time and a place for the high-end coffee table editions of these things.
Yeah, I was surprised how many people, because, you know, you can listen to Chris Marshall, the collected comics thing that he mm-hmm. has, his podcast. There's a lot of people that double and triple dip on this stuff. You know, they'll buy the comics, they like it, then they buy the trades. Why? I don't know, but I don't care. They let them buy the trades. And then afterwards, they wait for the big hardcovers or the omnibuy. So it does seem short-sighted because you're kind of going to, you are going to lose some sales because there's people like me. I love the omnibus format where I can, like, okay, I can get a chunk of this story that I never read. Let's say Final Crisis. Mm-hmm. And I could buy the whole stinking story in one big book and just read it cover to cover. It makes it easy versus tracking down 5,000 issues, or not 5,000, but 50 issues, 100 issues, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, there have been a couple of things I have not only doubled and triple dipped on, I've quadruple dipped on.
Quadrupled? Holy mackerel.
Actually, I think I could go quintuple, depending how you count it.
Holy, what was that?
Matter of fact, I'm looking at one set of them now. The Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe. I got two copies of it, the comic when it was in print.
Ah.
I've got the trade of it. I've got the hardcovers of them, and I've got the essentials of them.
Nice.
So, and I'd have done that with the Who's Who if they'd come out in those formats.
Holy mackerel. So you are that customer.
That's an exception. I rarely do that kind of double dipping or whatnot. It's got to be something, either it's a reference thing like that, or it's like Crisis on Infinite Earths. I got the high-end edition of JLA Avengers, absolutely did. Plus, I probably have either a trade or a lower-level version of those, plus the original issues.
Yeah, I kind of just did a double dip with the Garth Ennis stuff. I bought the Punisher stuff. I picked up all the trades and stuff like that, and then I went and bought the omnibuy when it came out. But, hey, speaking of the reference books, have you, from the Tomorrow's things, have you gotten any of those American comic book chronicles? They have, like, these decades and stuff that they do?
I have not.
Ah, well, I just went in and bought some of those, because they just came out with, like, the 1990s one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back and I picked up, I think it's the 1970s, and I just got 65 to 69. But it's kind of a nice production value hardcover book. And Tomorrow's, I guess once they go out of print, everyone charges an outrageous amount on eBay or Amazon. But they come back and they reprint them from time to time. So they come back and print.
Tomorrow's does some good stuff. I've picked up a couple of their other books over the years and stuff. And I've got a number of issues of Back Issue Magazine, sometimes Alter Ego and stuff like that. When they've got a concept or a theme for the month that just looks good.
Yeah, they really do have good stuff, and I appreciate it for what it is. And so this was like my first, I guess, official, I guess you could call it almost like a reference comic. But I've just kind of thumbed through it. I haven't read it yet. It literally arrived in this shipment that I just got. But I enjoy it.
Cool.
Yeah, so check it out if it sounds like something you would like.
Absolutely. Again, I think the Tomorrow's library is well worth digging into.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was just kind of weird. I was like, when I was heard that AT&T stuff, it just made me sad. I you know, I was amazed also on the Slack channel because we were talking about that stuff, the AT&T stuff. And then, you know, a lot of people are going digital, and it's just kind of weird. You know, it makes me wonder how much longer we have with our print, because I love print. I hate digital. I don't want to go digital.
I think what would be the death knell for comics were it to happen, and I don't know if the technology is totally there for all of this or not, if there was a color e-ink display that could be crazy lightweight, because it would be e-ink, it'd be crazy good battery life, that you could essentially have kind of a subscription model or whatever, and you've got a physical device that's comic book sized that you could just say, yeah, I want a subscription to this stuff, give it to me every week, and I just, oh, it's on the device now.
Boom, and it just comes out.
Yeah, something that's an e-reader geared specifically for comics.
That would be the death knell for it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it does make me kind of scared. You know, you see Marvel Unlimited come out, DC's kind of toying with the idea with their, what is it called, DC All Access? I don't know what it's called.
Well, they've got DC Universe, which is their streaming service, and it has comics on it.
Yeah, just very limited right now. But they could easily, you know, just dump a similar thing like an Unlimited on there, you would think. And who knows?
I think they're smart enough at the higher levels and even the lower levels to not do that.
Do you think Marvel is dumb for doing what they did?
I think that there is a contingent of readers that are not buying Marvel books anymore because they can get it through the Marvel Comics Unlimited, you know, stuff 6 months later.
That's what I think, too.
You could argue it's not hurting Marvel sales because they're still doing okay, but they're doing a lot of books and a lot of them are selling okay, not brilliantly.
Yeah, I honestly think if we did not have like Marvel Unlimited, we just had Comixology, which charges the same price for digital as we do when we buy our print comics, I would not doubt that Marvel would be selling 60% of the market right now, 59% of the market, because I bet you there's a big contingent there that just waits 6 months.
I think there's a measurable contingent. I'm unclear how big it is, but I don't think it's trivial.
Yeah, I would agree. Because there's been numerous people who said, oh, I'm going unlimited with Marvel. And you'll even hear it in podcasts. They're like, oh, well, I buy my DC comics, but I get my Marvel through unlimited. I'm like, and, you know, it's got to be quite a few people. Even if it's 10% of the readership or 20%, that's a huge number.
Well, it checks off so many checkboxes of, with the subscription model, it's way cheaper.
Way cheaper, yep.
It's digital, so no space issue, so that's way more convenient. And always available, potentially.
And always organized.
Potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
It is immediate gratification.
Yep.
Hey, I want this next issue, I can go snag it now, I don't have to wait to go back to the store or whatever. Some people are going to like the digital experience. Some are not. I've actually got a tech book right now I've not purchased because it's available both digitally and in print, but I can't get kind of a bundled deal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't decided. Well, I kind of want the print version that just seems more convenient because the digital version's a PDF of like 8.5 or 8x10 or whatever. So it's not like I could really read it conveniently on my Kindle Fire or whatever. But I want it digitally because it's a book. I don't want to lug that around back and forth to work and stuff. I'm lazy. So, you know, giving me too many choices there didn't benefit them yet. But, you know, with comics, because of how quick they can be to read, being able to put a slew of them onto an electronic device or whatever, I can totally see the appeal of that.
Oh, And especially, I have an iPad Pro,
mm-hmm.
and the screen on that is huge. It's not like an absolute, but it's bigger than an omnibus page. So I'm like, wow, you can blow up the art, zoom in, and it's way clearer than, you know, just the little print page.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes the font gets small enough on a print page that a little bigger would be nice.
Yeah. So it's weird because I feel like, okay, that's the way it's going. That's what's happening. But at the same time, I'm going to fight tooth and nail because I love my print. I'm going to keep getting it.
Well, the other thing that fundamentally changes if the industry moves to digital out of print is the collectability aspect goes out the window.
Yeah, that would be gone. The gaming variant covers, who cares when it's in digital? Nobody cares what kind of cover it has. I mean, then it's basically about the work itself. You know, I guess they could fight over who has the best artists and the best writers. But even then, you know, at that point, I don't think we'd see as much material coming out as what we do. I think that you'd have some people writing, you know, for, you know, keeping the IP fresh, but I think the number of titles would go way down.
I think so, because I don't know how viable some of the titles would be if you took out the sales from the incentive covers.
Yeah. So that would be a really sad way. So please keep buying print. I love my print comics. You guys don't read digital, please.
Read digital, but buy print is what you're saying. Do both.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Redeem your little digital coupons that they give you when buying the new comics.
Yeah, I question if at some point the industry is going to flip over in that direction or not. But last I heard, digital readership had capped out around 15%, maybe a little above that or whatever, but hadn't kept growing. And just like at one point I had thought that trades were going to take over as the primary methodology of distributing comic stories versus individual issues, that didn't happen. And while it looks like it's inevitable eventually for digital, it too doesn't seem to be happening.
Very true. Very true. Because, I know that I could save a bundle of money. And yet at the same time, I'm that stubborn guy. I grew up with this as a kid. I don't want to go that way. I spend my whole life staring at a screen. You know, you look at your phone. I'm working on a computer at work. And it's like, I get home and when I relax, I do not want to look at a screen. You know, I'll look at the TV screen. That's sure. That's far away. But when I get my comic, I don't know. It's a different feel, different experience. I love it. I love the smell of the comic. I love the feel of a comic. I like that tactile feel.
Well, and the tactile feel and the experience is a lot of it. Be it a comic or a book, you know, when you're reading, because I'm reading all of my novels these days on the Kindle.
Oh, okay.
Because I do a lot of it when I travel and I don't want to have a stack of books with me.
Yeah, they get heavy.
But it's like I'm somewhere in here. I don't have a sense of how far through the book I am, even though I can look and, oh, I'm X percent. Whereas when I was doing it with a physical paperback, it was blatantly obvious. Am I at the beginning? Am I near the end? Am I somewhere in the middle? Oh, I'm about a third of the way through or whatever. I could feel it. I could tell just at a glance there. I didn't have to have an exact percentage given to me.
You can literally pick up the book and see where the bookmark is and you know where you are.
Exactly. And in a comic, it's like that was a couple of pages back. It was so many page flips.
Yep.
Page flips work different digitally.
They really do. I'm amazed that like when you give me a review copy, it does, even though it's the same stuff, it feels so different. It really does.
Well, in a comic, physical comic book, you've got the two pages facing each other. In like the PDF of Sharky the Bounty Hunter, they'll do, you know, a page at a time.
And so you're scrolling up and down and it's just completely different.
Yeah. You know, and it means you've got more of that page flip experience going on every page versus, you know, every, what would that be? I guess the right page or whatever or something.
Yeah.
So it can change the experience. I mean, they'll do like a double page splash as a single thing or whatever, because otherwise it kind of ruins the experience. But it paces the story out differently visually for two single pages that would have been face to face that you've got almost the advanced look ahead feature physically that you don't in digital.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so you don't see yourself being a digital guy, do you, in the future? Hopefully not.
I've got such a large print collection, I don't see that stopping, but I definitely see the advantage of digital in a number of respects. I just have a lot of inertia behind the print side of it.
Yeah, me too.
If they were to come up with a e-ink display that had, say, 32 pages or whatever, that I could flip through and then just kind of digitally reprint, if you will, to a different issue, that I'd be all over. If it basically looked and felt like a comic, but I had all the advantages of digital.
That would be really nice. Well, that remains to be seen. Are you going to invent it for us?
I am not a smart enough technical guy to do that, but certainly I'd love to champion it if it comes out.
That's cool. Hey, and by the way, I want to ask you also one other, this is a quick thing. You getting caught up on the reading?
Not even close.
Ah, too bad.
I got like 8 comics read this week, and that included the 3 we just talked about, Weapon H, number 12, which was leading into Hulkverines. And then I caught up on the 2 issues of Batgirl and Raven, Daughter of Darkness, and just didn't have time for other stuff. I was crunching the January numbers and had some podcast editing to do for the episodes coming out later this week as this gets released.
Well, I wish you luck in that because I don't want to see you get too far behind where you're, have the 300 or 400 book backlog.
I'm hopeful that I'll have some time this weekend, maybe on Saturday, to get some reading done. The nice thing is it's only, I think, how many am I behind on right now? I think I'm only about 107 behind or thereabouts. So it's still doable, even in a single day, if I had a crazy productive day.
Yeah.
But of late, I have not been having crazy productive days, so I don't think I'll knock it out that fast.
Understandable.
But a good weekend or so can definitely knock it down substantially, hopefully.
Cool.
So let's see. Coming up, we've got the preview spotlight number 137 for the March 2019 previews. The deadline on that's going to be Saturday morning, March 9th. A regular format, one clip per pick, fun stuff in previews that looks interesting. I believe the online solicits are already out, and by the time this goes up, previews will be out.
Yep.
Because I think it comes out tomorrow as we record this on Feb 27th, which means I need to get the emails out for that.
Yeah.
And then we are going to do the comic book page teleconference on Saturday evening, March 16th at 7 p.m. Central Time. There's information on the forum as to how to call in on Skype on that.
Cool.
So anything else? Does that do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Action Comics 1008 from DC, Invaders number 2 from Marvel, and Star Trek Q Conflict number 2 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.